This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swing for the fences with the Fence Authority. They've been providing the Delaware Valley with fences for almost three decades. With four stores throughout the region and one of the largest inventories of wood, vinyl, and aluminum fencing, the Fence Authority makes your next fence as easy as one, two, three. Do it yourself or get it installed with the best workmanship warranties in the country. So swing for the fences at the Fence Authority. Your new fence is waiting at fenceauthority.com.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, if you're looking for a guy that just plays on the outside, I do think Isaiah Bond fits that a little bit better. His route tree that was used at Texas more so was for that, right? You had your 15-yard stops, your vert, some of those screens that Texas relied on pretty heavily. All of those fit exactly what Isaiah Bond was really good at. Now, I think Matthew Golden comparatively has a broader route tree. I think that, again, his ability to create separation on digs and out is just a little bit quicker. He's more quick than fast. I do think Bond fits that outside, quote-unquote, wide receiver just a little bit better than a Golden, who I think Texas deployed all over the field very well in 2024.
CJ Vogel covers the Texas Longhorns on with me and Nate yesterday. Talked about there is a Texas player in the first two rounds at every position of need that you would think the Bills have. There's a 330-pound nose tackle. There's two speed receivers. There's a corner. Although, as we kind of talked about yesterday with him, the corner, Jahdae Barron, who, by the way, when he described him, if you missed it, go back and listen. Him describing Barron sounded like he was describing Tre'Davious White. Like, as a person, as much as a player, too. Like, oh, you'll fall in love with him immediately. He's a hilarious character, but he's also, like, a leader. Like, everyone will fall in love with him immediately. You know, I'm like, and then when he started getting to him as a player, like, oh, that's Tre'Davious White. But he's often mocked, like, way before the Bills.
But I think he's also a lot of times a slot guy, right? Isn't he a nickel?
He's done both, and okay. I've seen a lot of draft people thinking he could move to the nickel full-time, which, right, the Bills.
He's 5'11", 194.
Yeah.
I mean, he could play outside. In fact, Daquan Hardy got some time at outside last year at the end of training camp when people thought there's no possible way the Bills would ever do that, and they actually did that at the end of the training camp. So it's possible, no
Brandon
doubt.
Brandon Codrington played a little bit outside, and isn't he
only plays outside, actually, now.
Right.
And I don't think he played at all nickel.
What's Codrington, 5'10", 5'9"?
Yeah, he's not the tallest, that's for sure.
Good morning. It's a... you know, it looks a little dreary out right now. The ball game today, 2 o'clock for the Bisons. The Bisons have a guarantee that they're doing, which is if it is not 50 degrees at first pitch, everybody in attendance will be able to use that ticket in exchange to a future game as well, either over the weekend or in April, the Bisons say.
I've never thought that I would see the day where everybody, thousands of people, would be rooting specifically for 49 degrees. Get it as warm as possible, but don't get it to that 50.
Could they put like a temperature tracker like on the scoreboard, and if it goes from like 50 to 49 and the crowd erupts while like the game is going on and nobody knows why? I'm considering going to the game today. I think I'm leaning towards going if the weather holds up. I'm going to bring a book, just hang out, kick my feet up, watch the ball game,
grab a
dog.
I'll see you.
Sal's going to be there. So, ball game today. We'll talk with Pat Mellicaro coming up at 8:45 on the Bison season upcoming. So, on the draft. So, there's Vogel talking about Bond and Golden. By the way, listening and talking to Vogel yesterday, For me at wide receiver, I've been on this recently that I really want to see them draft that one specific type of role, the downfield speed guy. But I don't need to see it in round one. And talking to Vogel, I mean, Matthew Golden is probably going in, almost definitely going in the first round. And he ran the faster 40 time. Isaiah Bond, meanwhile, who Ryan Talbot reported earlier in the week, is one of the 30 pre-draft visits with the Bills. He did not run a fast 40 after saying he was going to break the record.
So he was a 4.39. Golden was a 4.29.
Right.
Big difference.
Now, what Vogel pointed to was, or said, is he was surprised by the numbers. That he thought Bond was going to be right. That he was going to be close and that it would have been the other way around. Bond would have ran the faster 40 and Golden ran the slower 40. And Vogel pointed us to a thing that we're going to be very familiar with here because of how it went with Keon Coleman last year. The gauntlet drill and tracking the speed of the player rather than the time of the player on the 40-yard dash. As Vogel said yesterday, Isaiah Bond ran during the gauntlet drill, 24.1 miles per hour. That was the fastest speed clocked by any wide receiver at the combine. And he was the second fastest player overall. Only Maxwell Hairston, who was a corner from Kentucky, was faster. So here we go again with what's the value of the 40-yard dash? What's the value of play speed? Vogel said he thinks Bond played faster last year at Texas. He is more of an outside receiver. And he's probably like a mid to late second round pick. So I've landed on receiver. I do not need to see it in round one at all. In fact, I am very much loving the idea of drafting the second of the Texas receivers in round two because it just feels like it's a better fit for what the Bills need out of that position. Mm-hmm. It seems like he has some of the things that they value in players when you're testing them, and you don't have to spend as big of an asset on it.
So I am 100% with you on almost everything you said here, which is you like the receiver idea, especially a speed receiver, but not first pick.
Yeah.
I agree with you for a big reason, for the biggest reason to me of, let's just say they pick a receiver at 30.
Yeah.
Who's he playing over?
Hmm.
Is he getting inserted into the lineup over Keon Coleman, Joshua Palmer? I could even make a case he's got a fight with Curtis Samuel.
Right.
I'm not telling you my opinion of how they should do it, but we know how this team operates, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
This is why receiver has never made a ton of sense for me at 30. Where are the snaps coming from for a receiver at 30?
Right.
Receiver at 32 last year, that they needed that type of receiver, didn't get on the field a ton. He wound up playing more and starting, and they were starting to get him more targets, but it took a little while. Where is a receiver at 30 playing on this team right now?
The receiver at 30 is not playing to the level that you would expect the first round pick to play. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, because there would be snaps available, but not, you wouldn't think enough. I don't think you would think that that's a big enough number to warrant your first pick going to it. Because Coleman is going to play a lot. He already played a lot,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's even after they said that they were a little disappointed or let down by his play when he came back after the injury. He still was on the field a good amount. And there were games where he led them in snaps. You know, Hollins played a lot, and he's gone. Cooper did play a segment of the snaps. Like, what was that end up being? 40% most times, and he's gone. I that's why, though, I think second round isn't... To me, I like the second round idea a lot because there are enough snaps to warrant a day two pick. And there's enough to warrant that role getting more meaningful snaps, a speed guy. And
but if they take a guy specifically because they really need a speed guy, which is fine, you're kind of putting him in a role where that's just what he does. He's
right.
not going to be playing in all situations for you. And to me, that means, why am I picking him at 30? Whereas, you draft a corner at 30, he's got a legit chance to start day one.
Yeah.
And be a full-time player 100% of the snaps.
Yeah.
Legit chance.
You would expect him to be on the field all the time. And that's where, I asked this question briefly earlier in the week, I even put a poll up on it, on what position can you live with the Bills not taking in the first two rounds? Because they have three picks through round three. They could very well get back into round three. You might even predict they do, right? For all the day three picks that they have, try to move a fourth with a fifth. And
two fourths, three fifths.
Two fours. They have so many of those picks that you might expect them to get back into round three, but for now they don't have one. And is everyone okay living with a receiver not being a pick of one of the first three? It was pretty. It was pretty close between, no one said corner, and at least in just a Twitter poll, no one said corner, no one said defensive tackle. Like, those were single-digit percentage. Like, they got to take both of those things in the first two rounds. You got three picks, got to have a corner, and you got and get a defensive tackle. Little surprise, the defensive end was almost the same number as receiver. That's a little bit of the same conversation. How many, you could very well want more at that position, want a higher level of play at that position, and see some snaps available. But that's the same puzzle. You got to kind of figure out, all right, if I draft a defensive end, what does the snap count, what does the opportunity look like for that player at that position? The difference there is that they have not spent their first pick in the draft on defensive end in the last 2 years like they have at pass catcher. And you have a guy that is currently suspended for 6 games. I know Hoyt plays a lot of other positions too. And
I'm counting him as an edge though, mostly.
Yep.
Yes.
And you have a guy that has a long injury history in Joey Bosa. And that's, I guess receiver's rotational too, but defensive end, we know from the 100%. Bills, is very rotational.
Yep.
So defensive end is the other one where a lot of people, though, said, I could live with them not doing that on day one or two.
I could live with them not doing it, but I think you might need to do it. And that's fine. I could live with them not doing it depending on what else is there. If it's corner and defensive tackle, right, you could do that. So I'm with you on all of that. There's an X factor at defensive end, too. And we're a year away from, a lot of times, you know, these guys get drafted and you think, well, they're going to make this immediate impact, and they don't. But let's remember, the draft is really not about year one, mostly. Sometimes it can be if you're picking in the top half of the first round. I think they really like Javon Solomon. I think they think Javon Solomon's going to be a heavy rotational piece this year. So if you bring in a guy at 30, he's also got to beat him out. We can talk as much as we want about Greg Rousseau being on the field and A.J. Epinesa being on the field and Joey Bosa on the field, injuries, Michael Hoyt coming back. Javon Solomon factors into this. And I don't see a guy at 30 just coming in and beating Javon Solomon out for a job, to be quite honest with you.
Right.
Now, you're picking a top 15, it's a little different. These are guys that are maybe a lot of times ready-made, come in, rush the quarterback. I think they really believe in Javon Solomon to be a guy that's going to be, you know, in a part of the in this rotation. The other position, though, that I don't know how it came up at all with your poll or what you did here.
I think I know I the position
lot,
you're about to say.
I hear a
say.
Lot about safety.
Yeah, I didn't. And I had four options, and
no.
I it was.
I'm totally
I had to
good
leave
with
it
them.
Out.
I'm totally good with them not taking safety.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'll say, if you draft a safety at 30. What is he really going to play over Bishop or Rapp? Because
really,
I don't see it happening.
That's really where the three most interesting positions to me for that right now, the most debatable positions on what's the role, what's the opportunity, receiver, defensive end, and safety. Everything else I feel like is pretty cut and dry, right? They draft a defensive tackle. That guy plays. Like, he might not start, but that guy is on the field. There is enough snaps to go around for him to play. They draft a cornerback. That guy's going to have every opportunity to play. He might play every snap of the season, for all we know. They draft a lineman. Like, that doesn't make any sense because offensive lineman, where is that guy playing? You've got five starters, and as you've pointed out, they're bringing every backup back, too. Alec Anderson's back and Ryan Vandermark. So we kind of know about line. We know about running back. There's not room. We know that tight end is you've got two guys at the top there. There's not a lot of room. I feel like a lot of these positions are figured out for what's available. The three that are a little more debatable are receiver, are defensive end, and I do think safety is in that too, because if they drafted a safety, let's play that out. What's the role of that player going in? They generally don't play safeties early, and I mean, well, you tell me, have they sounded to you like they do trust Cole Bishop to be in a meaningful role in year two and be the starter?
I think the word trust, have they sounded like that, is interesting because Sean McDermott has made it clear he's still got to come in and win it. Yeah, you'd love him to do that, but he's still got to be able to do that. Nothing's going to be handed to him. All right, so earlier we said hi to some people in the bullpen. Good question. We missed J-Bud, so I'm going to say hi to J-Bud.
Forgot about J-Bud. He's a regular.
And get to J-Bud's question here. or his comment, because I want to address it, and that's getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. J-Bud, he said, hanging on to DeMar is screaming they need safety help. Yes, they need safety depth help. But I don't think they believe, the way they operate, that someone's coming in here and starting at safety over Bishop and Rapp. I want to just give anecdotal evidence here to everything with the safety position. Can you name the last safety they brought in here that didn't have some sort of experience in the system that started? I can't.
Well, the only one is Bishop, but they only did that because of injury, right?
Right, exactly. What I mean is he still had to work his way. Mike Edwards was brought in here to be a starter. He didn't even win the job. Right. Rapp waited a year. He was a spot safety, and then he wound up starting. Micah and Jordan were here for so long, but Joe, when they were injured, Dean Marlowe was the guy they brought in.
Yeah.
They brought in Kurt Coleman.
Kurt Coleman.
They like guys who understand their system. It is very hard to bring a rookie into this defense and start right away. Maybe Bishop could have done it. He could have been the outlier. He got hurt. I'll give you that, all right? But the reason why they brought back DeMar, Sportsman says, it is not because they hold on to the story way too much. That is not it. They signed DeMar to a minimum deal.
Yeah.
Do you know why they signed DeMar? Because if you don't sign DeMar, who are you signing? Someone just like him. A veteran who knows the system, he's experienced, and if he has to go in, you know he knows exactly what to do. That's what DeMar Hamlin is.
Is DeMar not, I mean, he's back here, and he's talked about wanting to retire a Bill, so I'm sure that played into it too a little bit, you know. He wouldn't have had a huge market, but did he pass on $1 million extra dollars to go somewhere else?
I don't know. It sounds like he went out. There wasn't really much out there for him. The Bills are like, hey, you can come back here and be a part of the mix here and still fight for a job, but be a depth safety, and that's what happened.
The guy I'm more interested for safety for that is Derek Forrest.
Very interesting.
Because he's started in the past, and he's a very different type of safety to me than Hamlin. Hamlin is... right place, right time, not an insane athlete for his position, but he doesn't make a ton of mistakes. He's a good tackler. But then also, we saw this in the Chief game, if you want to start mixing in man coverage, and he's got to go down and cover a slot receiver, you know, good night a lot of the time. Or he's got to come down to the box. Forrest is an athlete.
He's a boomer bust guy.
Yeah.
What you see from Forrest on film is he could be just blowing someone up and making a play and... make it a big game-changing type of hit. He also could get beat deep or somewhere because he's trying to make a play and it doesn't work out. And I don't think the Bills love having those kinds of guys back there because they love to keep everything in front of you, make the safe play. But what Forrest represents is a guy who can make a game-changing type of play in a situation. Maybe you put him in spot duty, special teams. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he'll play there. So... yeah, I give
it. So you have four.
I don't think he's going to be. I don't think he starts.
But even if he doesn't start, that's four safeties.
Yeah,
that's four guys. Like if that's their safety room going into the year, that's where safety is really interesting because there's this Nick Amonwori guy, and
I know.
He's a crazy athlete, and he's 6'3", and he runs a sub-4.40, and the one thing about you brought up that position, like where that's kind of the same thing. Where would the guy play? How much opportunity would he have? That's especially the extra layer of how the Bills treat that position. The one thing about drafting a body type like what Amonwori is, and I'm sure there's other safeties like that in the draft, is there another way to get that guy on the field that isn't just playing him a traditional safety? Because we have seen the Bills do that with Cam Lewis and with Poyer, like... the big nickel, right? Big nickel, the dime packages that they have. You might think, okay, well, if they... see, this is where, though, I don't know if they would do that at 30, though. You're going to draft a guy in the first round, and the only thing he's going to do for you in year one is these specialty packages?
But there aren't a ton of... if you want to go down that road, there are really only, I think, two positions that a guy can really walk in and play right away on this team. And that is defensive tackle and corner. Otherwise... anybody you draft at 30 is probably still going to have to maybe be in the background for a year.
Yeah, I do think that's where I wanted to go back to receiver for a moment here. I agree with you that, like, receiver, I don't expect anybody they draft in round one or two, and I don't think they'll draft a guy in round one, but I don't think that guy starts. And I don't even think that guy has much of an opportunity to start other than, like, if Keon Coleman just shows up in year two and there is, like, regression and just, like, it just goes horribly wrong. There are 960 vacated snaps at wide receiver from last year. Matt Collins and Amari Cooper walking out the door. And Josh Palmer will eat up a giant chunk of those, but it's not going to be 960. The Bills had 968 snaps on offense total last year. Wide receiver is a rotational position.
Yeah.
There's going to be a couple of hundred snaps available, that which is, by the way, that's what like Samuel played last year. Samuel played 378 snaps last season for the Bills. How does that 960 get eaten up? Palmer takes a chunk. Coleman can't really play much more than he did. He's already like in the 80 percentile a lot of the time. This is, though, where you brought up Samuel. A rookie could come in and eat up a chunk. Or do the Bills, how do they think of Samuel? He did look good at times at the end of the year. Do they feel like, okay, full offseason, let's get this guy healthy, because we did see flashes that when he is healthy, he's still the player that we wanted when we signed him. And they might think that there's an uptick for him as a role, but more so as, again, like, what is that? As the fourth receiver in the offense.
Can I give you an answer that you're not going to like?
Sure.
Dalton Kincaid was hurt a bit last year. They didn't play as much 12 personnel as they might have wanted. That's part of how you eat into those snaps.
More 12 personnel, less receiver snaps in general.
Yeah. I think that could be a way to get a little bit more there. Dalton Kincaid played 43% of the snaps last year. 471. That's not a ton.
Well,
for what they probably wanted, Dawson Knox was on the field for close to 60%.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, like, you're right. Like, the reason I'm not going to like that is because I want to see the Bills get better at downfield passing.
I know.
And then you'd be telling me they think the answer to that is internal. And my question would be, well, where internal is that? Is that, I guess, what would the number one answer to that be? Coleman getting more fluid at route running down the field and more efficient maybe down the field. I mean, Matt Collins caught a lot of their downfield passes over the course of the year. So if you're trusting that in Coleman and maybe Samuel staying healthy and doing it, or you're going to, you know, I would be very hesitant to do that if I were them, because I don't know where your improvement downfield is coming from then. But you might be right. That would be what happens.
And
they talked about Kincaid getting stronger.
And Bean was on a podcast with Fitz and Andrew Whitworth last week, maybe.
It was last
week. I was tweeting out some quotes about it. He was just on with Eric Wood, by the way. I think that dropped yesterday or today. You can, you know, listen to that. But in that podcast with Fitz and Whitworth, he made specific mention of how Dalton Kincaid's here. He's been in the weight room already. Mm-hmm. He's already on, like, doing what they want him to do to, you know, get bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
I think they believe that he becomes a much bigger part of the offense simply, A, because he'll be healthier, you hope, mm-hmm. and B, because that's kind of what they wanted, and that's why they drafted him in the first round 2 years ago.
Yeah. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you got a thought on this, on the first three picks that the Bills have, they have 2 seconds, days one and two. By the way, we'll be having our draft party at Resurgence on Thursday for round one. Ooh. And then Jeremy and me will be at Wayland on Friday. The week of the draft.
So the night of the draft, you're going to go, ooh, I love that.
We're going to have our round one draft party during the draft on Thursday at Resurgence. And then, yeah, we're going to be back this year, though, for round two and three at Wayland on Friday.
I love that.
Which I think is going to be a lot of fun. I love day two of the draft. And it's a Friday night, so
it is the night. Now, people always say to me, do you go to the draft? Do you go to the draft? I actually have been to a couple NFL drafts, but before I was in this job. And the reason why I don't go to the draft, everything's here. We hear from Brandon Bean here.
They're all here.
For TV people, it's good to go to the draft and get the visual of the guy going up on stage and all that. For us here, we need to hear from Brandon Bean. We need to do the conference call with the player, what he's drafted. So in the media room, draft night, it's one of the best nights in the media room. It's a long night, and it's packed with all of your colleagues, and everybody's watching the TV waiting to see what's going to happen.
They feed you well, too, don't they?
Oh, they feed us very well for all 3 days.
We're going to a break. We get to Paul Hamilton on the other side, talk some hockey. It's in Green Bay this year. Is it in the stadium?
They are having...
It's at Lambeau?
I think the draft itself is in the stadium, and the surrounding area is having a lot of the draft activities that are going on, yes.
Okay, but like the stage will be...
I believe inside Lambeau.
I'll check.
Pretty sure you can look at that.
The reason I'm asking, I'll look to find out, because it's been mentioned, the idea of Buffalo hosting an NFL draft once the new stadium is complete. And I don't know that I've ever seen a draft inside of a stadium. And maybe this will be our first chance to get a look at it. Or maybe I'm wrong, that has happened before.
Where was last year?
Last year was there was a Nashville one.
That was in the, it was Detroit. And that Cleveland. Was outside. I remember Detroit and Cleveland. Were either of those in the stadium? I don't think so. You're right.
Yeah, I don't think I remember.
Okay, so I'll check into that.
Yeah,
but
I will also
tell you,
it was Hart Plaza in Detroit last year.
Okay, so the NFL owners meetings are coming up next week, and maybe that's where we'll get a little bit more information about, you know, if that those plans could be happening for Buffalo in the future, which I believe Buffalo and the Bills would like that to happen.
Yeah. We'll get back to that. We'll switch gears, get some hockey, and when we come back, the Sabres win 7-3 against the Penguins last night. Paul Hamilton joins the show coming up next.
Sabres back in the Pittsburgh zone here as Dahlin will leave it for Roseanne. Far circle shot, scores! Great pass and a finish by Samuelson, and it's 4-1 Buffalo.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knix Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
One of your moments of the game, your Firth moments of the game, brought to you by Firth. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. Sabres win 7-3 over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Paul Hamilton joins the show now. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio, Jeremy White is off today. Good morning, Paul. The good win for the Yankees.
Yes. I was able to watch probably all the way through Rodan pitching, and then I had to get to the arena.
So you missed, what'd you describe it as earlier, Sal, Harry? At the end?
Got a little hairy at the end, yeah, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but it was a little tense, Paul. I mean, they get Williams to be the closer. He comes in against his former team on opening day, and they load the bases, and they put the go-ahead run on base, and he gets out of it.
I would have been fine if they just stayed with their closer from last year. I thought he did a terrific job.
Yeah, I don't know. They needed somebody a little bit better back there. A little better.
He was lights out.
Yeah, at the end of the year, though, and I can't remember. At the end of the year, they were playing, and they were doing a little bit better. But Clay Holmes could not be the guy anymore, and that's the guy that
not him.
I know. I know who you're talking about, too. Now I can't remember now, but you're right.
I mean, I'll just kick my feet up and watch you guys debate the Yankees.
No, it's okay.
For the next 8 minutes.
Didn't he pitch the eighth, maybe? I think I walked by a TV and I saw he was pitching the eighth.
And Hill came in. And Hill's got this. He's a lefty, Joe, and he's got this really, you know, those lefties that throw a little sidearm. I mean, it's so tough to pick up the ball.
Didn't Weaver pitch the eighth?
Yeah, I think so. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I would have been fine with him.
All right. Well, good start nonetheless. They get the win. The leadoff home run with the catcher leading off, which normally doesn't happen a lot.
Amazing.
But yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool opening day that we had in the league, if you count it, because of course you had the Japan games from a couple of weeks ago. So the Sabres, Paul, last night. I mean, if you missed any part of it and you just checked the score at one point and saw the goals racking up in the second period, man, they were all over the Penguins for especially that second, but that's the type of home effort though they've been giving lately, right? Like this is their third win in a row and they haven't lost a home game in almost a month.
Yeah, and what were the Penguins thinking? Nedeljkovic, last game against Buffalo, stopped 40 of 42 shots and had a goal and an assist. Jarry, the last time he played the Sabres, back in October, he got run after 11 minutes, gave up 3 goals on 5 shots, and he's the starting goalie? Really? I know he's been playing a lot lately for them, but I just was dumbfounded even before Buffalo scored on him on the first 2 shots of the game. Which meant in the last 16 minutes of play that he played against the Sabres, he had given up 5 goals on 7 shots. they didn't pull him then, but they did pull him after about 25 minutes because the Sabres scored 2 quick goals on him in the second period, and then he had given up 4. So off he went. I don't understand. Now, Nedeljkovic probably wasn't going to have a goal and an assist like he had in the game in Buffalo last time, but I don't know. It made no sense to me why they were starting a goalie that got run the last time he played the Sabres.
Yeah, let's see. 5 goals and 7 shots, Paul. That's a 28 save percentage. 28.5 save percentage. Not great by NHL standards, I would say. So,
you talked about the home record.
Yeah.
I think they're 10-2 in their last 12 at home, and I think it was 13-4 in their last 17 at home. And that's been one of the things that really has been a bugaboo for the Buffalo Sabres for a while is their home record. They have not been good at home for a while until this year, and now, you know, they finally have found a home and made it more difficult for teams to play when they come into this building. And, it was the road record that went down the tubes this year, and they were having trouble on the road. But now, you know, they've won a couple of games on the road recently.
Yeah. There will be very specific things we point to after the season. Paul, I know Lindy's talked about this and others have that, you know, like they're good at home. Their record even on the season now looks pretty good at home. They are pretty good at 5-on-5. They're good in the first period. So, like, we kind of know what to target here, right? Like, on the big picture, it's what? The power play, it's winning on the road, and it is holding leads, right? Like, do I have the list?
Yeah, I just wanted to, I knew I put it in the article yesterday. I had to find it. Since December 27th. They're 13-4 at home, which is 6th in the league, and they're 2nd in the league in goal scoring at 3.88 goals per game.
How do you
at home?
That was a question I had at the beginning of the year, Paul, was how able to score goals would they be? And they have definitely they've done that. I mean, they're not doing it on the power play, but even strength they certainly are. Looking back and even from last night, there's Kulik scoring 2 goals and he would be an answer to this. Kind of how they've been able to keep up offensively. They've maybe gotten some contributions. McLeod maybe is on this list, goal scoring wise, that are a little above what expectation was.
And it's all 5-on-5 when we're talking about home. I think I looked it up. I'm going by memory here. I told you since December 27th, I think their power play might be 30th in that time period. So when I say they're 2nd in goals at home at 3.88, it's almost all 5-on-5 and shorthanded. They're pretty good at scoring shorthanded, too. But yeah, the power play just hasn't been, you know, going for them. But Kulik, you know, talk about a couple of the young players that have come up and done well. Here comes Kulik. He was in Rochester earlier in the season, but he came up fairly early in the season. And, you know, at the beginning, he was having trouble scoring goals because, you know, he had to get used to the fact that, well, that shot used to go into the American Hockey League. How come it's not going in here? And he had to figure out NHL goaltenders and how to shoot on NHL goaltenders. He now has 12 goals in his last 34 games. And that's a 29-goal pace over 82 games.
Yeah, so, he's looked.
Know, that's not bad.
He's looked good. By the way, the power play got hot for a little minute there a couple weeks ago. They're 1 for their last 10 on the power play, but it did get hot a little bit for a while, and then obviously it's cooled back off. I'm glad you brought up Kulik. You just touched on him. That's great. I also want to ask you about Jacob Bernard Docker. It seems like he's fitting in on this team since the trade that he came over in the Dylan Cousins deal.
Lindy Ruff had a lot of nice things to say about him after the game. And, you know, he said, look, he's showing that he's hungry every shift, that he wants to be part of this. You know what impresses me, guys, about what he's been doing in the last four games playing for the Sabres? He hadn't played a game since December 28th. He had a high ankle sprain, came out of the lineup. He was cleared to play March 1st, and Ottawa never put him in the lineup. So he became a healthy scratch until he was traded to the Sabres. So it had been a long time since he had been on the ice. And I think in all four games, he's played very well for the Sabres. I mean, you don't notice him all that much on defense, which means he's playing well. He is a shot blocker and did that yesterday. Lindy talked about how he ate the puck, in his words, a couple of times with some big block shots, had a good hit, which led to a fight because that player did not like being hit like that. And, you know, Lindy's right. I mean, he's earned the right to play, and he's going to keep playing if he keeps playing the way he is. And he wants to be part of it. He's trying to show that he wants to be part of the Buffalo Sabres coming here, and he wants to be part of the Buffalo Sabres moving on into next year because he'll need a contract next year too.
One more individual, Paul, that I wanted to ask you about. He gets his first point in the NHL last night. Isak Rosén, he gets one on the Samuelson goal. Nice pass across the ice.
Nice shot, too.
Nice shot, too, by Samuelson that got the goal. So he's played a bunch of games here for the Sabres, hasn't really got a lot of ice time. And we know about his success in Rochester this year. I mean, he's one of the leading scorers in the league. There was a point where he was first. I think he's probably dropped since. But are you seeing anything from him on a consistent basis when he is up here that makes you think that there's another level there? Like, because, you know, year five after a guy's drafted, you might think there's not, you know, much hope for that. But then he has this year in the AHL. You know, I guess I'm kind of confused or wondering like what his NHL potential still is at this point.
Yeah, he's got 54 points in 55 games in Rochester, which is eighth in the league right now in scoring. The 27 goals as sixth in the league. But I haven't seen the offense from him. Tage Thompson wanted to talk about him, saying that he kind of does the little things during games that others don't notice that he's been doing here as a 22-year-old winger. But that play he made to Samuelson, that's what he's capable of. That's what he does in the American Hockey League. That's a pure offensive play that's, you know, almost knowing that a guy is going to be there, then threading the needle on a cross-ice pass, putting it right in the area that Samuelson needed it to score a goal right away. And that's what Lindy talked about, that he made two or three plays last night that they haven't seen. And he said he thought he skated well. Lindy Moore wanted to talk about a play he made on the wall with 3 or 4 minutes left in the game where he spun around, got a good exit to their guy up the middle and up ice. And he said what that told him is he's committed to making the right play, and he's starting to feel more comfortable making those plays. So that was a play that impressed Lindy Ruff even more than the assist did, seeing him do something like that. And that's what he meant by that he made two or three plays that they haven't seen that before. But, you know, he's played 11 or 12 games in the NHL. That was his best one. And Lindy also thought it wasn't as much pressure on him. You know, it was, he said it was good for him to participate in a game like that because he didn't have to worry about if the one mistake went in the net, they were going to lose the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could go out and play, you know, and that's let his instincts take over. And that's what he did. And he said it was a good game for him to be participating in like that. And, you know, he's still only 22 years old. So I always caution when I talk about, all right, that was his 12th NHL game. Yeah, maybe we didn't see points or whatever in the first 11. But he's still only 22 years old trying to find his way.
Paul, James Reimer starts again. It's been a bit polarizing with the fan base. Why do this, right? I mean, like, but 3 games in a row because he's played well. And guess what? He's going to get one of these games coming up. They have back-to-backs this weekend at Philly, at Washington, then one day off, and then they're in Ottawa, a 3-game road trip. But James Reimer, it seems to be his net right now.
Yeah, 4 games out of 5 that he's played. And played very well. There's some of those games they don't win if he's not in goal. But I think this is what Lindy Ruff's doing by putting him in net. He's trying to get this team to learn how to – I put it when I ask him the question, are you trying to teach this team to learn how to win? Because they're winning games now that they weren't winning earlier in the season. And he said, I would change the wording to that. I'm trying to teach them how to stop finding ways to lose. Which is, you know, I know Darlene mentioned that. One of those games early, whether Edmonton or Vegas, I don't remember which one, he said we would have found a way to lose that game. And we didn't. We found a way to win the hockey game instead of lose it. And, you know, even look at what they're doing to close out games. It seemed like every time they chased a goaltender, including when they chased Jari the first time, they were way ahead and then they'd lose. I mean, they were ahead 3-1 when they chased Jari, and Pittsburgh scored 3 straight goals, take a 4-3 lead and won the hockey game. And you know, they stopped doing that. The other day against Ottawa, they scored the game-winning goal with about a minute into the third period, and they had to protect the lead the rest of the period, 3-2 game. And Lindy said he counted only 2 scoring chances they gave up the whole rest of the game in the third period. That earlier in the year, they would have taken that 3-2 lead. That next thing you know, it would have been 5-3, and they would have been down, you know, because they would have sat back, stop playing the way they were supposed to be playing, tried to put it on the goaltender, and they would have lost the hockey game. And I remember sitting there thinking as the game went on, that, like, I never felt the Sabres were in danger after they took the lead in that third period. They seemed to really defend well, play well, and you never thought to yourself, uh-oh, this is getting a little goofy here. So that's changed recently too, where they close out a close game against Edmonton. They close out the game against Vegas. They closed out the game against Ottawa. They closed out the game against the Winnipeg Jets on the road against a team that only had 5 regulation losses at home. That's a huge improvement from what we saw earlier in the year.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Philly on Saturday at 1, Washington on Sunday at 3. Thank you, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Time out here. Ben Volin of the Boston Globe is coming up at 8 a.m. We'll talk about the Patriots adding Diggs, their big offseason, and the league owner meetings. That's coming up at 8 here on WGR. Time for your pick of the week. Your pick of the week from Riverfront Auto Sales. A stunning 2016 Chrysler 300 four-door sedan, anniversary edition. All-wheel drive, sleek lines, a powerful Force V6 engine. Beautiful, built for comfort and performance. It's got premium features, leather seats, high-tech system as well. So don't miss out. 2016 Chrysler 300, ready for the road, waiting for you at Riverfront Auto Sales. Call 716-886-1626 or online at riverfrontautosales.com. 1379 Niagara Street, too. Pick of the week is going to be the tournament continuing tonight.
Mm.
And the game that I've got my eye on, I'm just getting the schedule on it really quick.
Better games tonight, I think, than last night.
Auburn, Michigan. That's a late one, though. 9:39.
Yeah.
That's my pick of the week.
A little better on a Friday night. I got a pick of the week. You got to help me pick here in the bullpen, all right? If you walk out into our bistro right now, if you walk in, there are three big boxes of cereal sitting on one of the tables. I don't know if you noticed this when you walked in.
They've been there all week.
Well, I did not know that because I have not been here all week. I didn't know that. Cheerios, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and Lucky Charms. Rank them. Cheerios, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and Lucky Charms. If I was to go out there and pick one to eat a bowl of cereal, would it be Cheerios, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, or Lucky Charms? Rank them.
Lucky Charms
won. Let's go.
Lucky Charms won for me. Ben Volin coming up next from the Boston Globe here on WGR.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.